Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm good, Justin. How are you?
I've had better weeks, but I'm doing all right.
So, Justin, every year, it seems like since it started, you and I have been a part of CrimeCon.
We're the house band.
And there are many, many other podcasters that we're friends with there. But like this last time, it was us and True Crime Garage and Crawl Space. That was just a heck of a lot of fun hanging out with those guys.
Did we really hang out with Crawl Space? I mean, Tim and Lance weren't even at their booth most of the event, but whatever.
Well, you know, the 10 minutes before we started. Anyway, CrowdSolve Seattle, Washington, October 17th through the 20th, 2019. This is a new thing from CrimeCon. It's an event where the people who attend, you get to work with experts in criminology, law enforcement, forensics. You're coming up with new leads in cold cases. They have a couple of different cold cases they'll be working on. If you're into crime, if you've been to CrimeCon or wish you could go, if you're in the Washington area, especially CrowdSolve, by the end of the weekend, hopefully you'll help advance these cases, or at least the case you're working on. Anyway, if you want to know more about this, go to crimecon.com/crowdsolve-seattle. You can also just go to crimecon.com. On the front page, they have a link to the CrowdSolve event. Also, I missed it, but earlier this year, one of the, in my opinion, best true crime authors released a new book. His name is Ron Francell. He published a book titled Alice and Gerald, A Homicidal Love Story. I don't really want to give it away, but I would recommend going out to Amazon or wherever you get books from. Check it out. Alice and Gerald by Ron Francell.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/wondery for your free trial.
Tonight's case is a little different. It's boy meets girl online. They talk for about a year. Boy meets girl in person. And things don't seem to work out.
That's one way of putting it.
Oh, yeah. We wouldn't be talking about it if... everything was honky-dory, but there's expectations that people have. I mean, we're all on social media. People take the perfect angled picture on Instagram. We portray the best of ourselves online when in reality, most of us are imperfect. And I think tonight's case is somewhat of a buildup of anticipation that went horribly wrong. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the Farmville murders. This took place in Farmville, Virginia, September 18th, 2009. Now, the reason why these two meet, and we'll introduce them now, one of them is Richard Sammy McCroskey III. He was 20 years old. He was 5'9", 200 pounds. And the young woman he met was about 4 years younger. Her name was Emma Niederbrock. They were interested in a scene known as the horrorcore scene.
I was slightly disappointed when I went out and checked it out because I thought it was metal or hardcore punk. I just shared a moment with Acid Bath Princess on Instagram about Vision of Disorder, one of my favorite hardcore bands. But horrorcore is actually rap. And it's a newer sort of genre, although I listened to the Geto Boys back in the 1990s. That was horrorcore before there was the label. And I have to say, with any musical genre, there's a handful of good and a whole ocean of bad. Most of the genre sounds like a really poor ripoff of one Geto Boys song, kind of like Oasis, just sounds like one Beatles song that they've just repeated over and over for their entire catalog. But there is some good stuff out there. So they're all into this genre. They've met online through this mutual interest of this music.
They were talking online. I don't know how far it got online, but Richard or Sammy had this idea in his head that Emma was his girlfriend.
Yeah, he thought that they were a thing, exclusive, an item. Maybe I'm just old, Aaron, but if I've never met somebody in person, I can consider them an acquaintance. I can consider them a friend, but I would never consider somebody that I've only met online a girlfriend or any more than just an online friend.
I think the correct term would be interest.
Yeah.
There's an interest, maybe an intention. But until you actually meet, it's not really official, I don't think. Because as we all know, and you talked about earlier, your online persona is usually carefully crafted.
Now, Richard, he happens to be, I don't know, what do you call, an amateur rapper, aspiring horrorcore rapper, I guess. He's 20 years old, But I'll tell you right now, he looks younger than the 16-year-old girl he's hanging out with.
He looks at most 16, at best 16.
Yeah.
That's how I would describe him.
He also seems to have the maturity level of a teenager. So this doesn't work out for him in life. Looking small, behaving somewhat immaturely. It's said that he gets picked on a lot. So he has this alternative persona online, you know, this alternate image of himself, of this hardcore rapper, right?
Well, to be fair, he's 20. And that's still a period of time where a lot of people are immature.
Yeah.
And having listened to just, you know, about a handful of different horrorcore artists, he's actually better than pretty much the rest of them I've heard.
Wow.
Seriously, I think, you know, if I'm just judging this genre based on a couple of weeks' time, he sounds pretty good for the genre, but it's not for me.
I've been listening to it all week long myself. There's been a handful that I like, but for the most part, I was expecting a chocolate chip cookie and I got oatmeal raisin. They've been talking online for almost a year and they decided to meet, correct?
It had to do with a concert that was going on. We could meet up and then go to this concert in Michigan. It was in Southgate, Michigan. It's really a festival called Strictly for the Wicked. And here's the problem. So you're a parent, your daughter wants to go to a concert with some boy she's never met except for online.
Who's 4 years older than her.
Right. So it's this situation where, okay, what are we going to do here? She's getting older. She needs to get out and do things, but maybe we can go with, you know? So there's this plan that comes together to make this work for the parents, which is Deborah, Emma's mom, and Mark, Emma's dad, will take them. And Emma's friend, Melanie Wells, who's 18, she will come in from out of town, and then they'll all go together.
So the parents are taking them to the concert, but not exactly chaperoning them around at the concert. They're just going to drive all the kids up to the show and do their thing. Did we mention that her father is a pastor at the Walkers Presbyterian Church?
No, we're getting to that.
It's just an interesting contrast. Her parents are very religious, and then she's listening to the subgenre of rap that essentially is all about being crazy and killing people.
But there's a lot of death and murder in the music. But Emma's parents were separated. It looked like they were headed for a divorce. So Deborah and Emma lived together in what was described as a Dutch colonial home. This is in rural Farmville. Emma's mom, Deborah, had taken her and Melanie to horrorcore concerts in the past in different states. And the only difference here was now there's a boy coming along, a young man.
It's a phase, right?
That's one of the things you could guess that maybe the parents are thinking is, well, they're young, it's a phase, it's not really going to harm. You know, I mean, I remember when I was young and my parents were very religious and there was this movie that was going to come on. I don't remember the name of it, but it starred Kiss. I think it was something like at some park or something. I don't remember what it was called. Do you remember this movie?
No, I don't. I wish I did now.
My parents, and I'm not Googling it, but my parents did not want me watching it because it was related to the devil. And, you know, if you look back at Kiss, and if you were to pull this movie up, I'm sure it's on YouTube, but it's probably ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's nothing that's...
Well, Elvis Presley used to be considered the devil's music.
Yeah, maybe still is. I don't know. Yeah.
But compared to horrorcore rap, I don't think so.
But yeah, every generation has what they would consider the devil's music, I'm sure. But really what this comes down to is they're into horror stuff. And this musical genre just happens to fit their tastes. I think that's it.
And Emma is close with her parents. She was homeschooled. Like I said, her father was at a church. The parents were coming together, even after their separation, to take their daughter to a concert. They're trying to make this work. They're being civil. They're
trying to be supportive of the family. Family comes first.
Now, one more note. Deborah was an associate professor of sociology and criminal justice at Longwood University.
She has some cool parents.
Yeah, I'd say these are supportive parents. These are good parents. Melanie Wells, who was Emma's friend, she was a couple of years older. She was born in Fort Polk, Louisiana. She had one brother, but she lived in West Virginia. She dropped out of high school. But just like Emma and just like Richard, she's a fan of this horrorcore music. Let's get to the festival, because we just said it before. If you have this online persona, you can't match it in real life. Not likely.
Well, what was his online name? Psycho Sam?
It was Psycho Sam. And there are videos. So if you want to listen or watch this guy, Psycho Sam, and that's S-Y-K-O-S-A-M, I think, or something like that. I don't remember, but...
It's spelled wrong.
It's spelled wrong, whatever.
So when he arrives from California and gets off the plane, they have a long car ride to this concert. It is reported that Emma, upon seeing Sam, or Psycho Sam in person, wasn't impressed.
I think it was a cool reception.
Yeah.
It was, oh, she's young. She's 16. I don't know what kind of filter she has, but... If you're a young man, I'm sure you recognize when someone's not into you and you can feel it.
How absolutely uncomfortable and awkward is this? He's going to be there for several days. He's going to be with her family in a car for hours. Now with somebody who just isn't into him.
So he gets in Virginia on September 6, 2009. And that's the very same day that Emma's friend Melanie arrived from West Virginia. It's on September 12th that they go to this festival. And I think there's this idea that, yeah, she's cool to him, but maybe at the concert, maybe things will take off. I mean, after all, this is why they were getting together for the most part, and maybe things will just start working out. But according to the way things went down at the concert from people that were there, things did not get better. This is, of course, rumor. So it's not like we have video, we have pictures, and we can say we have all these witnesses that came forward. But word had it that not only was Emma not into Sammy, but she was flirtatious or more with another attendee or even a band member. So someone that wasn't him.
I could totally see that happening. Sam's not able to compete with that.
Well, and he's not happy. But it's not really about his happiness. Emma can do what she wants, but we're talking about this case because of what happened next. They get back on September 13th. You know, I don't know how this is possible, but back in 2009, because I thought this died before then, but apparently MySpace was still being used and they were all using MySpace.
I haven't used MySpace since like 2004. Wow.
Melanie actually posted to her MySpace page and said that she was going to be back home in West Virginia on September 16th. Everything kind of goes quiet, and Melanie's family doesn't hear from her, and they become concerned. Wednesday, September 16th, 2009, Melanie's father, Thomas, went to the Kelly home, and this is the home of Deborah Kelly, who is Emma's mother. He's going to pick his daughter up. And of course, he couldn't get a hold of her. No one's answering the door. He actually stayed outside the home for upward of 7 hours.
Wow.
I think there was this idea that maybe they went out and they'll be back, but he can't get a hold of anyone. So once in a while, he goes up and knocks on the door. And then eventually he has to leave and go back home. This is of great concern to him. This is just not like his daughter to not be around when he's expecting her.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to sit there for 7 hours because it's a long drive home and it's his daughter.
Now, Melanie's mother, Kathleen, is starting to call friends of her daughter's and trying to track down if anybody knows where she's at. And she ends up calling someone named Andres Shim. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing Andres wrong.
Yeah, it might be Andres.
But he's the guy who runs Serial Killin' Records in New Mexico. And this is actually the label that puts out a lot of horrorcore music. Richard, or Psycho Sam, actually helped him with his website. He tried reaching out as well. And, you know, from all accounts, this guy is a decent dude. You know, he's there to try and help if he can.
That's really interesting that she was able to track down this guy who runs this record label, because she knew that there was somebody, an artist on that label. Like, that's going beyond the call here. And it's cool that this guy was so receptive to it.
Well, it's almost like detective work. It's like either she was able to just go through enough information and find this, or maybe she was keeping tabs on what her daughter was doing so that she was aware of what she was into. Either way, Kathleen was calling Deborah's home multiple times, trying to get a hold of anyone, but the phone ends up being answered, and the person on the line is Richard, and he is telling her different stories about why Melanie can't get on the phone. And, you know, once you've heard story three or four and you're not getting anywhere, you go from concern to you're probably getting angry. And now you suspect that whoever's on the line is lying to you.
Yeah. And parents know a lie.
September 17th, Kathleen called Mark and asked for him to check on her daughter. Now, obviously, Mark is a pastor and he's Emma's dad. He goes to the house about 5 o'clock. Now, just before midnight, Kathleen, who's not heard from Mark, because I know that's kind of a fast forward here for us because we're talking about 5 o'clock and now it's midnight. But literally, he says, sure, I'm going to the house right now. He goes there and then she doesn't hear anything. Hours go by.
Now, Mark probably has keys to the house. Unlike the other parents, unlike anyone else, he can get inside. So Mark goes offline and now she's calling in a welfare check.
Law enforcement goes to the home, and meeting them at the door is Richard McCroskey III. They ask, hey, we're checking on these people. We're checking on Mark. We're checking on Melanie. We're checking on Emma. And we're checking on Deborah. Richard says that the girls were at the movies.
So he's there at the house by himself and everyone's gone to the movies. The police don't come inside and check anything.
No, it's really weird because Richard doesn't live there. Well, maybe law enforcement doesn't understand the relationships.
There's no way they would know.
Well, unless if you call in a welfare check and you know there might be someone involved in that group who is out of the norm, which in this case would be Richard McCroskey, maybe you should say, when you check on this house, also check for this individual because they're new. But I mean, granted, if you're worried and it's a last minute thing and you're trying to just get answers, maybe you don't include that. And law enforcement, they don't ask too many questions of him. They just want to know where these people are. And it sounds legit. So they leave. So Kathleen calls again to the house and Richard is, I guess, running out of excuses, maybe, because now he doesn't quite know what to say. And she says, you need to call the police because these people are missing and, you know, we need to find them. So Richard, about an hour later, does call the police.
This is weird, though. He calls the cops and says that he hears noises in the house, specifically in the basement.
So they go to the basement to check for these noises, but they don't find anything.
I don't get this. I guess he was trying to appease Kathleen by calling the police, but then he tells a lie. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, if you're suspicious of Mr. McCroskey here, you could imagine that he's saying this so that he can tell Kathleen, oh, the police have entered the home. They've been here. Now they've left.
I guess you're right, because she could call and say, did you go out to the house? Did you go inside? And they could confirm, yeah, we went out there.
They went to the basement.
Yeah.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free
at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Friday, September 18th. This is about 3:20 in the afternoon. The police go back to Deborah Kelly's home because Kathleen's been bothering them again, you know, and by all means, she needed to, because day after day after day, this is now going on 5 days, and there have been no updates. No one's heard from anyone except for Richard. And when they go up to the door this time and it's opened, it smells terrible.
Smells like death.
So they go inside. At this point, Richard's nowhere around, though. He's gone.
He's definitely fled the scene.
They go inside this home and they find 3 dead bodies in a downstairs bedroom. So they go and obtain a search warrant and go back inside, and they find a 4th body in a room upstairs. So this is now a crime scene. This whole house is a crime scene. There are 4 dead people inside this home.
Quadruple homicide. Now, the smell of decay gave them probable cause to enter the home. And then when they found the bodies, that's what allowed them to get the search warrant. It's always interesting to me to see how the procedure plays out like that. Now, they know the family's been murdered. They know the friend's been murdered. There's no sign of Psycho Sam. The manhunt begins.
The Virginia State Police is running the investigation. They discover the bodies of Mark Niederbrock, Deborah Kelly, Emma Niederbrock, and Melanie Wells. All 4 of them have been murdered. To give you an idea of what must have happened, it appeared as though Emma's mom, Emma, and Melanie were all murdered while they were in bed with some heavy, blunt object. And then Mark was murdered after he got into the home. There must have been some kind of struggle. So he was actually, as far as I can tell, he was ambushed.
So Sam, he waited for everyone to go to sleep and then used a sledgehammer or something to bludgeon them all to death.
Well, we don't really know. I mean, it's one of those things where you could say, yeah, he waited for them to fall asleep and then attack them. Or as they were sleeping, he couldn't sleep. And this whole idea of how he was rejected was spinning around in his mind and getting worse and getting worse. And then he acted out in a rage, right?
And then he sat there with dead bodies for days until Mark showed up. And then he had to kill Mark because he came into the home. What did he do for days in this house?
Well, this is a bit of a spoiler alert, but this case doesn't go to trial. Now, we'll get to that later, but since it didn't, we don't have court documents laying out what happened in the home, because if there was a trial, that would have been covered. when you're looking to sentence somebody, you need to have the reasons why you want to put them away for forever or put them to death, whatever the case may be. And since this didn't reach trial, that information doesn't get out, at least not where we would feel comfortable saying, here's what happened. But whatever happened in that house, we know that Mr. McCroskey didn't shower that whole time, didn't change his clothes. So when he left there, he reeked of death and decay. So the police, of course, gather evidence from the home and
they go on social media. They find descriptions of Richard and start their hunt.
Now, we talked about Andres, or we'll just call him Shrim, the guy who runs Serial Killing Records. He said, and this is to police, he said that Richard had called him on Thursday afternoon and told him that he had killed one or more people. A deputy from the local county sheriff's department had remembered speaking with Richard when he had gone to the home to do a welfare check. So things are really coming together quickly here. They know who likely did this. When Mark was murdered, Richard actually left soon thereafter in Mark's car. So he takes off, and the car got stuck at the end of a driveway on Poorhouse Road, and this is in Farmville. I guess it looked as though he had backed into a ditch. Well, the person that lived in the house called the police, who responded, and this was at 4 a.m. They gave Richard a ticket for driving without a license, which is really strange because you would think they'd want to know whose car it was, right? License and registration. But they just give him a ticket for no license. So they don't even know that this is a wanted man.
Well, everything's delayed and they've already interacted with him several times, but it's a different police officer every time and they're not putting it together. You know, it's just, this is some kid at a house who says everybody's gone to a movie. Now this is some kid who's got his car stuck on the side of the road.
Lies work because they do ask, whose car is this? And he said, it's my girlfriend's dad's car. And that's good enough because that's the truth. But it's kind of a lie because he's not saying that he stole it. And maybe it's because it's so early in the morning that they don't want to bother anyone else. You know, they don't want to call Mark Nierbrock up and say, hey, is Sammy here supposed to have your car? But
I know it's all perception, but this is small town. You know, there's, 10,000 people in this city, in this town. So the police behave as such. They're like, oh, somebody's stuck in a ditch out on this rural road. I get it.
A tow truck driver who's going to take the car to impound it gives Richard a ride to a convenience store. And obviously, Richard smells really, really bad. Saturday, September 19th, 2009, this is at 1 a.m. The police are distributing Richard's photo to the Richmond International Airport. Be on the lookout for this guy. He's probably going to come through here. They know he's going to try and get back to California. That's where he lives.
Well, that was a good tip because that's exactly where Richard is, right?
Yeah, they find Richard asleep in a chair. This is in the baggage claim area of that airport. He was waiting for his flight so he could get home. And they arrest him and charge him with first-degree murder of Mark Niederbrock, grand larceny of Mark's automobile, and robbery for taking money from Mark's wallet. Now, those are just the initial charges. As you know, when you pick someone up, even if you know they've killed like 8 people, you don't charge them with everything up front. You put some charges on them that'll hold them while you put everything together.
It said that when he got a ride to the airport, I think it was a taxi, the driver had to roll down the windows because he smelled so bad. Then he's at the airport. I'm sure he looks disgusting and smells horrible. You know, we all go about our day. We don't put this together. Yet, here we have somebody that's just murdered, and he's going about his day, trying to get home.
He's a horrorcore rapper. His lyrics involve death and murder, and, you know, they're fairly disturbing to most people, I'm sure. Many, many people who look at him and say, you murdered four people. They will then point to his music and say, see, all you've rapped about for the last so many years, now you're living up to it. You rap about death and murder, and now you're doing it. So we get back to this thing where after Columbine or after whatever shooting happened, people always point to a video game or the music, and they say, this was a factor.
People always want to blame it on something and not the person doing it. I mean, they'll even play the music backwards and try to find secret messages to find a reason to blame the music. But in this case with Richard or Psycho Sam, he's obviously got problems. I would say he snapped, and whether or not he lived up to what his music talks about, it doesn't matter. He went on a rampage. I mean, I don't think he was thinking about, I'm going to turn into my Psycho Sam persona. The reason why is because a reporter asked him why he did it, and his response was, Jesus told me to.
Yeah, that's what's alleged. I mean, I know that someone else says that he said something about voices. His own sister said, Jesus told me to do it. That's very much the kind of humor that he has. So she says that's him. She could totally see him saying that. And when his sister Sarah was speaking with reporters, she also talked about a voicemail that she got from him on that Thursday. And at the end of his message, he said, I love you guys. And she said, that really hit her because she said, we don't do that in our family. We don't leave I love you guys as a sign off on messages. We don't do that. And so that told her something. It was different. But if you listen to the lyrics of his music, there's a lot of brutality. And so you say he snapped, but he had, what, days in between the time that he murdered this mother, her daughter, and her daughter's friend, and then killed his supposed girlfriend's dad. This is days apart.
And he had enough know-with-all to lie his way through all this.
So I don't know if he snapped so much as became enraged. And sometimes people, when they get enraged like this, someone needs to pay. So in his mind, you know, and we've seen this before, I mean, some of us might even have personal experience with this, but you build up a relationship in your mind, and when it doesn't work out the way you want it to, it's hard. But some people just get sad. Some people get upset. Some people get angry. And some people, as we know from all the husband and wife cases that we cover, some people get revenge.
Well, and this is why there's all the memes and sayings like the husband did it, or he felt rejected, so he has to murder everyone around him.
Well, I think it's beyond the rejection. I think he felt ashamed. So again, there was probably a day or two between the murders of the three women and Mark Niederbrock. The autopsies were performed on Monday, September 21st, 2009. This is actually when the police officially announced who were killed inside the home. All four of them were bludgeoned to death with a sledgehammer. They were so brutalized that they could not be identified, not by sight. The items that were found in the home that could have been responsible for the or utilized in these murders were a ball peen hammer, a wood splitting maul, and some say a sledgehammer. So, which is it? I mean, a wood splitting maul sounds like a brutal weapon.
They also found a meat cleaver and a knife, but I don't think they were used in the murders.
Now, the autopsies did not really reveal a good time of death for the women. Their deaths are estimated to have been sometime around that Wednesday. Also on Monday, September 21st, Richard's home in California was visited by police. This is at 1 a.m. They had a search warrant, and they took many things from that home, including Richard's computer, obviously. His sister spoke with reporters, and she was saying that Richard was extremely passive, so just hearing that he is the main suspect really blew her mind.
Well, we never want to think these things of the ones we love. I get it.
For all we know, a week before this went down, Richard was this meek guy that seemed younger than his age and didn't seem like a threat to anyone. You put someone in the right situation and good things can happen, bad things can happen, things can really change. October 19th, 2009, Richard was indicted on 6 counts of capital murder. Richard was charged with capital murder for each of his 4 victims and capital murder for murdering multiple people within 3 years. So they hit him with additional charge because of the way this went down. This isn't the kind of case that he's going to win.
No.
So you wonder, how does this not go to trial? Because he would be screwed. They have all the evidence they need against him. They've collected evidence from the home, from his home. They know people who were around him, what he smelled like, what he acted like, the number of lies that he fed to Melanie's mother. They know they've got the right guy.
He was appointed an attorney on January 2010. So his attorney says, you need to do a plea deal. You need to plead out here. Otherwise, they'll put you to death.
This is a question because the prosecutor can say, no, we really want to pursue these tough charges against this guy because he deserves it. But on the other hand, a plea deal saves a lot of court costs and you can still get someone put away.
And it saves the victims' families the heartache of going through the trial.
Yeah, that can't be understated. That is a very difficult thing to go through, I can imagine. Or do they need to hear all that?
So he ended up pleading guilty to 2 counts of capital murder and 2 counts of first-degree murder.
He was given 4 life sentences in prison and lost his right to an appeal. This is actually a pretty good deal, I'd say, because he's not going to get out and he can't appeal. So this is done. He's away.
No more trials, no more.
No more lawyers talking about this. This is done. It's over.
He doesn't address the courtroom. He doesn't address anybody. This was all brokered pretty much behind closed doors, and he avoided the death penalty.
Deborah Kelly's parents, Thomas and Margaret, read a statement, and it was, "We have endured a tragedy of unspeakable proportion. We are relieved that justice has been done. While we will never forget our loved ones or the circumstances of their deaths, we hope to move forward and begin the healing process."
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Now, the attorney for Richard McCroskey, I guess he moves forward to let the press know, in Richard's own words, what happened. And that, you know, the media wants to know, why did it happen? So according to this statement, Richard McCroskey, Psycho Sam, had become enraged after reading texts that Emma was receiving from other guys while they were at this festival. And, well, Richard, like you said earlier, he thought they were exclusive. So even though there was this coolness when they met, he thought, well, she'll warm up to me. Didn't happen. And on September 14th or on September 15th, Richard was drinking, smoking pot, and may have taken some painkillers. He killed Melanie Wells first, who was asleep on the couch. Then he went upstairs to kill Deborah Kelly. Then he killed Emma in her bedroom downstairs. All of these women were asleep when he attacked them, And this is backed up by the fact that there were no defensive wounds on their bodies. All of them were dead in a short time before 3 a.m. Now, Mark arrived on September 17th, and Richard attacked him. Between those welfare checks, remember the first one, Richard answered the door. The second one, he was gone. Richard had dragged Mark and Melanie into Emma's room and tried to clean up the blood that was in the den. And he also recorded a video where he admitted he knew that he needed to pay for what he did and thought about killing himself. And this is where we find out what he used to murder these people. The woodcutting maul that was used to kill his four victims. Richard said that's what he picked up, and he felt like, because of the weight of it, that nobody would suffer. If I hit someone in the head with this, they're going to go out quick. There won't be suffering. So for all the talk about his violent lyrics and his interest in the horrorcore genre, apparently when he decided to murder these four people over the course of 2.5 days, he actually wanted to give them some mercy when he killed them.
And let's be clear, Emma was his target. Everyone else was just collateral because they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And if he would have left before Mark showed up, it would have been one less murder.
A disturbing note here. In 2012, it seems that Richard had sold several letters and signed pictures to a crime collector site of murderabilia. It's against the law to profit from your crimes. And so for Richard to have sold these items and for them to be distributed and resold, etc., well, it's not allowed. Serial Killer Inc. maintains that Richard didn't sell them to them. So a little controversy. I don't know if it was ever proven whether he actually did profit from these things, but you're not allowed to.
Well, they could check his prison commissary, which is essentially the escrow account that you can give money to prisoners so they can buy the essentials to live while incarcerated.
On Thursday, September 24th, 2009, a celebration of Mark's life was held at the church that he led. He was buried there as well. September 25th, a memorial service was held for Melanie Wells at Brown Funeral Homes, South Berkeley Chapel. And on October 3rd, a memorial service was held for Deborah Kelly and her daughter, Emma Niederbrock, at Farmville United Methodist Church. And of course, all of these people were dearly missed. You know, they always say this is not a place where these things happen. This is really, really a shocking case because, you know, anytime you go to meet somebody, you're taking a risk. I mean, there's a comedian I listen to where he says, I'm surprised women date men at all. I mean, they're just dangerous, you know? I mean, I don't feel like you and I are dangerous people, but I mean, you think about it, when it comes down to murder, most women are murdered by men.
Oh, that's the old saying by Margaret Atwood. Men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Women are afraid that men will kill them.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, Tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.